first time we did it, I was scared to death. She snuck out in that cotton dress. Jumped on in and we drove to the lake. Put her hand on my knee and said, I can't wait. I had everything we needed in the bed of my truck. Turns out my baby loves to fish. She wants to do it all the time. Early in the morning, in the middle of the night. She's hooked and now she can't get enough. Man, that girl sure loves to fish.
Where is the girl like that? When I'm out looking, you know, actually, I've got one.
Yeah,
she's
you
wonderful.
Do. Good luck finding another one.
Yeah, no, mine. I did real good with that. By the way, that was Craig Campbell. You need to go out and buy that song. Support these guys who do that cool music. And Craig Campbell came up with a great song there. And go out and buy that song. Support the guy. Anyway, this is Fish and Frank. I got Captain Carl in the chair across from me. And we just had a snafu. And we're starting over for the third or fourth time.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. God, I can't believe this is happening. Anyway, Carl, you've been just fishing like a madman. Yep. And pretty much every day. And yesterday, or was it today?
Today, it was in Englewood on somebody else's boat.
All right. What Carl does, Captain Carl does, charters, you can hire him to go on his new gargoyle boat. Gargoyle, right?
Dargle.
Dargle. Okay, you can get on the gargoyle, and, you know, it's got the big monsters off the front and the winged beast on there.
Yep.
But you can hire him to take you back in that nothing bit of water and catch these big fish on his boat. Or you can also hire Carl to go on your boat. And that's what Carl did today. Yeah, some people out of Englewood hired him. And so what happened? You went out to teach him how to fish and where to go and what to do. What was going on?
Well, we started off the day. They have a bigger boat. It's a 22-foot bay boat. So we needed water to get up by the bushes. So we started the day off at picking a grass flat, you know, a very good grass flat up there just south of the Tom Adams Bridge. Holds a lot of grass. There's a lot of water movement out there. So we started off the day 15-pound braid, 30-pound leaders on bobbers with a Rockport Rattler on the bottom of it connected to a shrimp. The reason why I do that is because a lot of times when you're slapping that bobber through the grass flats, the trout or your whatever you're trying to catch is getting drawn to the sound of your bobber. With the Rockport Rattler on it, when you pop that bobber, you're drawing all the tension to where your hook is, where the bait is.
All right, the Rockport Rattler is a jig head.
Yes.
And it's a lead head with a hook on it, and it has a built-in glass rattle on it. Now, what weight? I mean, if you're putting it in a bobber, you really don't want a heavy one. What weight are you using?
It's 16th ounce or 8th ounce is what I'll use underneath the bobber. Especially if it's not a very windy day. If it's a windier day, I will bump up to the quarter ounce.
Okay, now, are you hooking the shrimp through the head or through the tail when you put it on that Rockport Rattler jig?
I'm pinching the tail off, just the first section of the tail. I'm pinching that off, and then I'm feeding the hook through the body and out the top. Because naturally, a shrimp walks or swims forward in the water, but when he's trying to get away from a predator, he snaps backwards in the water. So every time you pop that shrimp on that jig head or you pop that bobber, it looks like he's snapping in the water. The rattle, you know, it puts sound off. It draws all the attention to where your bait is, where the hook is. So you're going to get a lot more hookups that way.
So, okay. So now how did you do? You were drifting the flats, just going out and finding, what, 3 feet of water?
We were in about 3 to 4 feet of water. The guy didn't have a trolling motor on his boat, so we had to use the wind to our advantage. We just set up on a grass flat to where the wind would push us down that whole grass flat.
Now, when I do it, I cast out, and I'm letting my bobber get quite a ways away from the boat, because yeah. I always figure the boat's going to scare them, and then they're going to come back around.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like 50, 75 feet at least away from the boat with the popping corks.
Yep, and then that way you don't have to make a lot of casts. You could just have your bait out there, and as you're drifting, your line's going to stay slack, so you could pop it as you're drifting along.
So you're letting the boat move away from the bobber, and every time the line gets tight, you give it a good pop.
Yep.
And wait for the line to get tight, pop it again, just letting the boat pull the bobbers along.
Mm-hmm.
And the nice thing about putting that Rockport Rattler in there, it would hold the bait down in the water better. Sometimes when I'm doing those drifts and I've just got a hook in the shrimp wants to drift right up to the top, and you can see the shrimp trailing behind the popping yep. cork, and that's not where I want him. I want him down in. Usually if I'm in 3 feet of water, I'm about 2 feet to 30 inches yep. below the popping cork. Even though trout do like to come up for it, I do better like half three quarters of the way down on them.
Yeah, trout, they do live on the bottom, but I mean, they look up to eat. You will catch them on the bottom, free line or shrimp, or just on a regular jig head or Rockport rattler on the bottom. You will catch them that way too, but you know, most of the time they're looking up to eat, so you're going to catch them in the mid range and mid surface.
So now, after you get done with the trout, what?
After we got done with trout, we went to this marina up there that's got a big rock pile out in front of it, and we anchored up there in about 4 to 5 feet of water. I mixed some chum, you know, from the shop that we sell here. I mixed it with a little bit of water. I started chumming the water up for the greenbacks.
I don't use it really by the handful like a lot of people. I just take a little bit, maybe a dime, quarter-size pits, and chunk it out in the water. I like to spread it at first, and once I start finding the bait, then I narrow it down to more of a single spot.
Well, most of the time when I pull up to get bait and I'm chumming, I'll anchor the boat. I take just the powder, no water, no manhaden oil in it. I scatter just a little bit of that in the water just so it gets out there and floats around with the current really good.
It'll disperse, and it really travels across the surface of the water, and little tiny bits of it are constantly falling down. Mm-hmm. And people say, well, it's not enough. Well, if you're only 2-3 inches long and you've got something the size of a grain of sand, that's like a 6-foot person eating a hero sandwich.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically a quarter pounder with cheese right there, a little tiny grain of sand size something. So it really does work well, and you don't need a lot because you don't want to give them a lot, because if it drifts away from you, you're taking the baits going with it. So you want to do a little bit at a time to find them. And once I find them, then I start... I wet mine down. What do you do?
I wet it down. I mix a little bit of water with it because it already has manhaden oil in it. Some people like to use manhaden to give it a little bit more, you know, oil slick or whatever. Water works just as good. But like you were saying, I use little pieces. But when I take those little nickel-sized pieces or quarter-sized pieces, I squeeze it really tight so that it stays together and it sinks more in the water. And it breaks up, you know, in one spot instead of breaking up. Here, and there.
So you're making almost like little dough balls out of it.
Yep, and I squeeze as hard as I can, and I throw it all in one spot, and then as it's sinking, it's slowly breaking up because you squeeze it so tight.
And it's kind of dispersing through the whole water column. Yep. And as soon as it hits the water, it starts to break up, and then while it's on its way down, it's already coming apart into little pieces, but it gives you a nice cloud of chum all the way down the water column. Yep.
I mean, 5 to 10 minutes, I threw my 12-foot net one time, and we had to let bait go. We had way too much.
So now, once you did that, what do you look for when you go to find a spot? You know, because around Lemon Bay, there's some great fishing, but it's
limited.
Lemon Bay, right?
Yeah, it's real limited areas though. It's not a very big area like the Charlotte Harbor.
So it's what do you look for in a place like that? Because you're trying for snook and redfish. Yep. What's the key thing that you look for?
One of the main things that I look for is water movement. If there's moving water in an area, there's going to be most likely fish holding up there, because that water movement, the tide that's going back and forth, that's pushing your bait through, and predators are going to sit there and ambush them. So, like, we fished this area just south of the Tom Adams Bridge. There's a bunch of islands right there by Ski Alley. That when that water is coming in and out of that pass, the water is really moving good. So it really pushes a lot of shrimp, crabs, bait fish. It's pushing them in and out of that whole little area between the islands, on your shorelines. So we picked that area first to start with. We picked the solid wall. We started fishing on the wall, going down the wall. We catch a fish. We anchored a boat. Most of the time when I catch a fish, I'm always going to anchor the boat, because most of the time fish travel in little schools or packs, or it's safety in numbers.
Now, try not to drop a chain anchor over the side.
Yeah, don't do that.
What you want to have with you is, if you have a power pole on your boat, one of those hydraulic anchor things or electric anchor things, or get a stick-it pin, and that way you've got something you can just stick in. It's nice and quiet. I used to use mushroom anchors a lot because it would just stop the boat there. The only problem that I have is I've gotten the habit of carrying a mushroom anchor and a stick-it, because what I'm doing is I have a big old heavy mushroom anchor that I drop over the back already tied on, stops me, and then I go around the front and I stick the front of the boat so it doesn't swing into my fish.
I do that too. I have a power pole and I use a stick it at the front.
Yeah, because I've had a lot of problem And the last few times I was out, you know, I dropped the little mushroom anchor over the back or the stickit, and then the front of the boat swung right into the fish.
Yep.
And so I've gotten the habit of either using a stickit in the back and a stickit in the front, or a mushroom anchor in the back and a stickit on the front.
Mm-hmm.
And that keeps the damn boat out of my fish, because sometimes I'm fairly close.
Yep. Like today, the guy that I was on the boat with, he was wondering why we were staying so far back, like where we were trying to fish. And I was trying to explain to him, I was like, if you're in very clear water, the fish could see very good. If you could see them, they've probably already seen you already.
Especially a 20-some foot boat. I mean, that's a big presence in the water. And just the concussion of when you walk on it, it's sending big waves out. I mean, people don't realize how far those waves travel. Yeah. And waves are just sound. And so staying back is kind of key to being able to get on these fish.
Mm-hmm. Especially in clear water. If you're in dark, muddy water, you could get closer to the mangroves or wherever you're fishing. But if you're in clear water, the best thing to do is stay back far, you know, as far as you can to where you could cast. Like the guy had a hard time making a couple casts today. So, I mean, I always tell my people, if they have a hard time casting or you can't get it to where you need to, just say something to me. I'll get you there. It's not a problem.
It's funny because a lot of people still want to cast overhead when they're throwing at the mangroves. And I sidearm more, because when I'm sidearming, coming off the side is more like a golf swing. I can get a better arc to the bait, lower arc, with more distance. When I'm coming overhead, the problem is if you're off by even a foot, you're right through the branches of the trees. So I'm doing a lot more sidearming, and it's not a technique, especially people up north who live on lakes and stuff, they're used to just casting straight ahead. They're not, you know, they bring it back over their shoulder and throw it forward, and it goes kind of where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have to do down here is we're more spot fishing. We have to be a lot more accurate, and to me it helps going sidearm. And I keep my thumb straight up the rod, because if I keep my thumb straight up the rod, I can point my thumb in the direction I want it to go.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps me a lot do that.
Yeah, I do the same exact thing.
It's, people don't realize it, but if you're throwing a rod and kind of whipping it sideways, you really don't know where it's going. You're relying 80% on luck. If you use your thumb up the rod and use your thumb as a pointer and try and keep the guides and the reel should be pointed at where you're going to cast, not pointed down towards the water and kind of, it's not like backing into a tennis racket.
Nope.
So, anyway, we teach people that all the time on how to hold them and how to do stuff, because muscle memory is a big thing.
Yes, it is.
If you, I use the exact same wrist motion when I'm casting over my shoulder as I do on my front cast, my side cast, or my backhand cast, and it's just changing, you know,
angle,
the angle of your hand, but it's the exact same movement, and that builds muscle memory. And that allows you to, the more repetitive you do in a motion, the more likely you are to be able to repeat it each time.
Yep. I mean, I broke a couple windows when I was younger. I got yelled at for, when I was a young little kid, I used to try practicing casting to the side of the house and stopping it. There was a couple times they went through the windows.
Yeah. Norm was teaching me how to throw a 4-0. And this is back in the early 80s. And he was teaching me to throw a big Penn Senator. You know, 60, 80-pound line, 8-ounce sinker, because we were casting for big fish with these big rods, and they didn't have good large spinning reels. And if you were going after big fish, you had to use a conventional. And this canal was 60 feet wide. I was about 20 feet up on my yard, and I thought, well, if I just cast out into the seawall, you know, it's 60 feet. I'm, you know, what's the chance of me throwing 80 feet? From where I was, 20 feet up on the grass, threw it across the 60-foot canal, up probably 30 feet of lawn, and pegged the stucco on the house across the way. I'm like, oh my, thank God it hit the window.
Yeah.
But, I really thought I was going to be paying for a broken window. All I had to do was go over and just touch up his paint on his stucco. Chunked a chunk of stucco out of it. But that was me learning how to throw a 4-0 years ago. Because when I grew up, it was all, you know, use push button reel spin cast or regular spinning reels. I'd never thrown anything like a 4-0 or a 6-0 pen, and it's a whole different art form.
Yeah, it is.
And it's way different than bait casters. I mean, it's basically the same thing, but still way different. But yeah, I know what that's like. Throw it up, you know, all of a sudden, donk! Oh my god. So anyway, back into the fishing. So how'd you do on the snook? Was it more snook, more redfish?
What was going on? It was a lot more snook today than anything. All the snook we caught today were between 20 and 24, 25 inches. We had a couple that were 26, 27. The redfish that we did catch today were all oversized. They were between 30 and 34 inches. When we were fishing for the redfish...
Now, is that pretty common for out in Lemon Bay?
Yeah. Englewood, they usually have big fish because they're so close to the Gulf. Especially on their redfish, it's easy for those oversized fish to get back out in the Gulf where they live most of the time. You do catch a lot of oversized redfish, a lot of big snook out there. The way we were fishing for them, we were using all white bait, greenbacks for the redfish and snook. We'd go down this mangrove wall, we catch one, we anchor the boat right away. I grab five or six pieces of bait out of the live well, squeeze them, throw them out there with my baseball bat, chum the water up a little bit. And if something would happen, if something blew up, we'd stay there for a couple minutes, fish. If nothing blew up, then we continued on down the wall.
All right. What he meant by the baseball bat is he doesn't throw them up there and hit them with a bat like he would a ball. We're talking about a wiffle ball bat, the great big ones that are about 4 inches wide with the top cut off. And you plug the bottom of the handle and you put the baits in there and acts as a launcher to allow you to throw the bait much. If you try throwing them by hand, you're going to throw them 20 feet maybe. Yeah. But you can throw 30, 40, 50 feet by putting them in one of those bats and then you just sling it forward and it's
covers the water.
Yeah, you get a nice spread to your bait. And when you squeeze them, you're squeezing the air out of the swim bladder, kind of disrupting their ability to stay upright in the water. So as soon as they hit the water, they swim around circles very radically. And when they're spread out, they kind of call to each other. They make little noises, and that's how they find each other. And them making that noise in distress and swimming around without having the proper air in their system, then they make an easy target for the fish. And when the fish hit at them, they literally blow up on the surface of the water. It's just
crazy.
A little explosion right there. And if you're on your game, you've got your baits already rigged, you're sitting there waiting, and you're holding them in the casting position, your bait in the water, and you throw the bat with the five or six chum pieces in it, and then as soon as they blow up, you throw right in that spot. And that it's an amazing hookup. Because
I like to tell my clients, they have, if they see a blow up, they have 5 to 10 seconds to get their bait where that blow up was before that fish moves on to find something else.
Yeah, because he's going to blow up and then look around and see if there's anything else right there to eat. And if your bait hits the water at that time, it's splash hit. Yep. It's instantaneous.
It's almost like you cast it right in their mouth. It's like they're looking at it coming down. And, oh, look at this.
Yep. So you don't, 2 minutes later, or okay, I'm reeling in, all right, I got it now, I'm going to get ready and cast, and no, you're too late already. Yep. When someone's got the bat and they're going to throw them, you have your bait in the water with the correct line out to cast, your finger on the line, ready to go, and as soon as you see it blow up, you pick it up, don't rush the cast. Yep. Pick it up, pause for a second, get your distance down, and then throw at it. It's better to take 1 second, not 10, but one extra second to get it where you need it to be rather than be 30 feet off the mark. So anyway, so you had a good day. More snook than redfish.
Yep.
And sounds like you had a pretty happy customer.
Yeah, he was happy. It was a little change up for me because I've been switching over toward tarpon, sharks, and cobia lately, especially here in the harbor.
So how's the cobia been here in the harbor?
The cobia, they're starting to move in. They're not here in full numbers yet. We got two last night. They were both short. They were both about 30 inches.
So what'd you hook them on?
Whiting.
Yeah. Live cut?
We had one out live, and whenever I put a whiting out live, I always put them on a float or a balloon because they naturally live on the bottom. So a lot of times if you throw them out on the bottom, they're going to go back in their hole and hide.
Yeah, they're going to be hiding in the weed or around a rock or something because they're in distress.
So then the one I did live, I threw him out on a balloon, kept him up off the bottom about 4 to 5 feet, down. The other ones we cut up. We used big cut chunks, probably 4 to 5 inch chunks. A lot of the middle section is what I'm using on the whiting.
Yeah.
I'll cut the tail off and the head off and use it in the chum. And then I'm free lining one chunk out there, and then I'm putting another chunk out on the bottom with a weight. Just because, every fish is different every day. They'll hit on the surface one day, the bottom the next day, the middle.
I tell people, put your bobber line out first. That should be your longest line away from the boat. Then in the rod holder on the other side of the boat, throw a free line bait. And then in one of your forward rod holders, about a 45-degree angle, cast out a chunk with a big sinker on it. That way you got the bottom, middle, and top, and nothing's tangled. Mm-hmm. So I'm 100% on your side. That's been my pattern for years because I want all the boat.
Yeah.
The water column covered. I want something on the bottom. It's usually my bigger bait. I don't know why, but I like my bigger bait
on the bottom.
My live bait's underneath the float, and another cut bait, a smaller chunk, just kind of drifting.
Mm-hmm.
If it's too big, it doesn't ever seem to come up off the bottom with the current. And I like it kind of bouncing with the current will grab the line and billow up the line, and once it gets up enough, it'll lift that bait up a little bit, and then it all kind of falls again, and then that current billows the line up. Mm-hmm. It kind of makes it bounce.
Yep. I mean, a lot of times when I do that, I'll butterfly whatever bait I'm using, like, because I leave the fish connected. I butterfly it, starting at the tail up to the body.
It's kind of like when you go to fillet a fish, except you're starting at the tail and you cut along the backbone and you're just cutting off two slabs of meat. So you get kind of like wings. Mm-hmm. You leave the backbone and the main tail of the fish on, and then you're slicing up towards the head until you hit the ribs. And then you've got three pieces. And if you put it out in the current, it tends to flap together, causing it to
makes it look alive, put out vibrations.
And little slapping noise, and you got a lot of scent in the water from that.
Yep. The tarpon have been starting to show up pretty good lately. What I've been noticing up towards like the bridge area, the tarpon are going off. Their feet really feeding at the beginning of the outgoing tide and the end of the outgoing tide. That's when they're blowing the water up all over up there right now at the bridge. I mean, they're going crazy at the beginning and the outgoing of the end of the tide.
Wow.
Yep.
That's very specific. I like that.
I mean, there's some tarpon right now in the middle hole towards the west wall right now. I know they're there. I've seen them. I just haven't had a chance to figure those ones out yet. The ones up at the bridge, they're eating big thread fins, ladyfish. We caught two last night out on chunk mullet.
Yeah. It's amazing how many people think you have to have this live perfect bait for tarpon, and they love a chunk bait. Just a big old piece of dead bait, and they love it.
We had steel leader on, and the tarpon still ate it.
Dark is wonderful, because in the dark, doesn't matter. Have you tried that new tieable steel from American Fishing Wire?
No.
Oh, I got to show you this stuff. It's absolutely amazing. You can tie a uni knot in it.
Really?
Yeah, it's steel leader, plastic coated. And you don't have to carry the crimps or even a cigarette lighter. You don't have to weld it or crimp it. You can literally tie it. You can tie it line to line, just a uni to uni with your line to the steel leader.
That's nice.
You can tie your hook on with a uni knot. Or I've watched guys at the counter. I'm sold out. We won't have any until the beginning of the week. I mean, I started playing with this stuff. Kale was showing it to me. Sean was here for the tent sale, and he gave Kale some of it to try. And he's been using it on sharks and cobia, and he's even used it on snook now. And what's going on is that, you know, he said, yeah, this is pretty good. So I started playing with it and tying knots in it. Had a spool sitting on the counter, and I just handed it to a guy. Take a pair of scissors and cut it, 40-pound. And it comes in all different varieties, from like 13 pounds up to 90 pounds or something. But you literally cut it with a pair of scissors, and you just tie a knot in it. And that's clinch neat. Knots work. Uni knots work the best. But, I mean, I've watched guys, and everybody buys it.
Yeah, that sounds really good.
It's a little more money. It's like $10 and change, you know, about 11 bucks for the spool. But no crimps, no messing around. You can. But you can use a swivel, or you can tie it line to line. This stuff's great.
Yeah.
AFW came up with a real cool thing here, and it's in
that. That does sound really good.
Yeah, you're going to love this stuff. I don't know of any captain who's not going to have this on the boat, because you don't have to do a haywire twist. You don't have to carry any special tools. Just another roll leader like you have anything else. You get in the macro, you just tie this on and throw it out there, and you've got your fish. Yeah, I was shocked.
The wild fish of the night last night was 10-foot sawfish.
10-foot sawfish? Really?
That was pretty wild.
That's a dinosaur.
He ate a live whiting. It was 45-minute fight. We didn't have a clue what it was. It was hugging the bottom like a stingray, and then it was kind of moving like a goliath. So we didn't know what it was. It was a toss-up in the air. And then he finally got it up, and I seen the bill come up, and you see everybody just back up on the boat.
Isn't it amazing how the primitive instincts kick in? The hair on the back of your head kind of stands up a little bit. You get that twitchy feeling like, I am not supposed to be doing this.
It was huge. He was really pretty fish. He had all of his teeth. He wasn't missing any at all. I mean, he was really big. He was strong.
And what's amazing is they're not an aggressive species. They're really rather, you know, once they figure out you're not doing them harm, you're trying to, you know, get the hook out and do everything. They're actually, you know, it's still a fish you got to watch, because he swipes his head and hooks you.
Yeah.
You're in deep doo-doo. Yeah. I mean, those are big, long, sharp, bony spikes.
They're fast with that sword of theirs. They're very fast.
You know, if you can get your hand on it, you know, and fingers between the teeth and just kind of hold on to it, it's not bad, and you get the hook out. But you need to control that beak, but do it close to the fish's head. Because the further on the beak, the more likely you are to break it, and that's just not cool.
Yeah, he had the line wrapped on the beginning of his bill. We got it untangled. We just using a rod tip, you know, swinging it around his nose. We got it untangled. And then we took one of those long...
That hook remover
remover using for
sharks. Aren't those things great?
Oh, the best thing in the world.
They're like $35 for this fish hook remover, but it's stainless. It lasts forever. If you don't drop in the water, this thing is going to last for years.
I've had mine 2 years now, not a single stick of rust on it or nothing.
And what's cool about it is you're going to notice that when you squeeze it, the part that pulls in, one side is shallower, the other side is deeper. If you have the back of the hook towards the deeper side, it literally rolls the hook.
Comes right out.
And it just takes the hook right out. And it doesn't hang because the point is facing down. I've even gone down when a fish has kind of gut hooked it, grabbed the hook, popped it, and it right just up. Comes right out. I don't have to use these stupid circle hooks.
They're great. I love those things.
You know, nothing works good on getting a circle hook out of a fish. They're just horrible, horrible hooks. They're great for as far as they do hook in the corner of the mouth, unless they're offset, then they usually hook in the throat, and you can't get them out. It's impossible. But with the J hooks, this thing just makes it
amazing.
I don't know why they made a law about that stupid one you had to use that rip the hook out of the fish. It literally uses the fish's weight to tear it out, when this one actually removes it.
Yep.
This is actually a good tool.
I mean, I came up from, as I was coming up from the tail, you know, I had my buddy hold the rod forward, and I came up from the tail, grabbed a hold of the hook so he didn't hit me with his bill, and I just grabbed a hold of that hook, turned it once, and it came right out, and he swam off.
Yeah. It's just cool to catch a dinosaur.
It was wild. It was crazy. Did not expect to catch that. You do not know what you're going to hook into in the Charlotte Harbor.
The adrenaline rush is just amazing, because you're sitting there, like you say, I think all of us who fish quite a bit, we want to know what we have before we see it. By how it runs, how it moves, how it pulls, how quick it is, how slow it is. Is it slow and steady? Is the rod jerking? You know, all these little indicators. And to us, the badge of honor is calling the fish before you see it.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it really is. It's like the badge of honor. I mean, it's like, if you're good, you should know what it is before you land that fish. But sometimes out here,
it was a toss-up last night what we thought it was, and it wasn't even one of them.
It wasn't even close, yeah. No. It's a dinosaur.
Yeah, I mean, Bill came out of the water, and you were like, everybody just backs up and is like, whoa.
I love that. It's like when you get that at night, and it's pitch black, and you've got the couple little lights because you screwed up, and the lights in the boat aren't working, and so you've got a couple of flashlights and stuff, and you get the fish right up next to the boat, and you pick it up, and it's a hammerhead, comes up out of the water, and you watch everybody around you go to the other side of the boat. It's like everybody's right there. Yeah. Okay, they're pulling on this, and you're doing that, and then this big teeth and face comes out of the water, and everybody backs to the other side of the boat. I don't even think they know they do it.
No.
I think it's just instinct. No. Okay, yeah, that looks good. Great from over here.
And there's a lot of little bull sharks running up there by the 41 bridge right now. There's a lot of smaller black tips running up there, too. A lot of fun, you know, fun-sized sharks to go up there and just have a ball with. But you will also have a chance of hooking into a big tarpon up there right now, a cobia. And there are a few big sharks running up there by the bridge right now, too.
Yeah. Now, You do a lot of lure fishing. Obviously, the Storm Twitch is just a favorite. I've added a few new lures. I've added some Unfair. I'm adding some of the Savage lures, the new ones.
Savage has that new Cobia lure out.
Yeah.
I tried it last night in the dark, and we didn't get nothing in the dark on it. But I'm going to try it here one of these days during the day, and I guarantee that new Savage lure will work pretty good.
Yeah, we're going to some of the hard bodies, and we're going to go to some of the Unfair lures. And if you're listening and you have a lure that you like to use that we don't currently carry, I've got about 4 feet of wall space, the stuff that we're not going to carry anymore. We cleared out. So I'm looking for something different, something that we should be carrying that we're not carrying. So this is your chance to, you know, help us figure out what it is you want to fish with, and we'll be happy to stock it. I mean, that goes for anything. If you have something you like to use, just call us and we'll stock it. We'll keep it in regular for you.
It could be the next best thing down here.
Even if it's just, you know, I carry lures that I've got one guy who likes to use them, and he buys 2 or 3 a year, and I keep them on the wall for him because that's what we should be doing. You know, I shouldn't just stock the best sellers. I should stock what people actually want. So this is your shot. Just Frank at fishandfranks.com. You can email me or call the store or whatever you'd like to. Anyway, what else we got to talk about?
I mean, fishing's going crazy, and it's just getting better and better every single day. The water's warming up. There's more bait starting to move in our harbor. A lot more cobia are starting to show up. More tarp are showing up. I mean, the snook, right now, the snook are all on the move right now. They're getting ready to start breeding. They got breeding on their mind.
Yeah, they're all getting ready. Now, the rain we had this last week is what I call the snook savior rain, because snook can live easily in fresh water. They do not have to have salt water to live, but they do have to have salt water spawn, because if they spawn in fresh water, what happens is the eggs sink and most of them die. And where if they spawn in salt water, the eggs float, the salt makes sure all the 90% of the eggs hatch, or however many percent. I mean, it's a huge percentage of the eggs actually hatch, and we have a great snook population. But when we don't get rain at this time of year, the snook would just go to the end of the canal and go, okay, I'm here, and they'll spawn right there. Then we do get a rain, and it wipes out the eggs. So right now, these rains we've been getting at night, overnight rains and all this, are perfect. Mm-hmm. It's putting that little bit of fresh water coming down the rivers and out of the canals, the dams, just enough to make those snook go to the barrier islands, spawn where they're supposed to. You know, it's pushing them out, making them do the right thing. And we're going to have some phenomenal snook fishing in the next 2 or 3 years.
I mean, this year's snook fishing was great. It's still going.
It's going to get better next year. Do you know the West Coast of Florida catches and releases over 1 million snook a year?
Oh, I believe it.
Yeah. Now, they figure on the East Coast of Florida, they do about 300,000 a year. But we do more than three times that and still have 56% of the fish get through the slot limit. 58%.
That's
and on the East Coast, even though they do only 300,000 catch and release snook, they only have 38% or 39% of the fish get through the slot limit. So there is nothing like Southwest Florida for snook fishing.
A lot of our snook right now are going to be trying to move out towards the beaches, and you're more outer barrier islands. So I mean, if you're trying to target snook, that might be a little bit something, you know.
Start walking the surf in the morning and cast them parallel to the shore. You only want to be 3 to 6 feet off the sand.
You know, Venice jetties, if you're up that way, Englewood Beach, Boca Grande Beach, Cay Acosta, those are all going to be great places to go look for snook.
So, anyway, do you have any openings coming up? Are you booked solid, or you got a few openings? Go ahead and tell them your telephone number.
941-565-7325.
941-565-7325. All right.
945-565-7325.
Okay, that was for if you're like me and mostly brain dead and you need help remembering stuff. But you can always click Carl's picture right next to this, or his logo, and whichever one I've got next to this radio show, and it'll take you to Carl's page and his Facebook stuff, and there's a little page about what he does and all that, and you'll have a lot of fun with Carl. And if you're just coming down, you have a new boat and you're wondering where to go, what to do, whether you're anywhere from Venice all the way down to Estero Bay, Carl's very familiar with the whole coastline, and if you want to do inside or outside, you can hire him to go on your boat and you know, make your day a lot better.
Fun.
They have a lot of fun that way. It's nice to actually see it done in person. So anyway, this is Fish and Frank. That's Captain Carl in the chair across from me. And thank you so much for listening. And go out and buy this song.
Yeah, it's a good song.
The first time we did it, I was scared to death. She snuck out in that cotton dress. Jumped on in and we drove to the lake. Put her hand on my knee and said, I can't wait. I had everything we needed in the bed of my truck. Turns out my baby loves to fish. She wants to do it all the time.